Hi, I'm Norm Shealy.
NormShealy.com.
You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Hi, this is Eva Herr, and thanks for listening tonight. Tonight I have with us a little bit, well, significantly different show. It's certainly not science and medicine, but it is something very close to my heart. And it's what I do with my spare time. I think sometimes I talk about it. In my spare time, I volunteer for this organization called Second Helpings Atlanta. And we rescue food and feed the homeless with great food from Whole Foods and Trader Joe's and Costco and all kinds of places. And tonight I have with us Allie Allen, and she's one of the founders of this organization, and I'm so grateful for what she did because it certainly filled my life with something that I needed. So I want Allie to tell us how she did that, how she kept it going when it was hard and felt like she was abandoning her family, because I know it had to be that in the very beginning. How she did it, what were the first steps, and a little bit about it. So, Allie, thanks for being with us tonight.
My pleasure.
Tell me a little bit about you and where you are, and I don't know if you have contact information where somebody could contact you. And I know you're doing some new things, so I'd like to know about that too.
Sure. Well, I'm a native Atlantan. I have three grown kids and have always been, I guess, a doer and a giver backer. I've been active in a lot of different organizations, and I guess I had reached the point where I wanted to be involved in more of a community project. So to get started, I was active in our synagogue at the time. This was about a little over 10, it was about 10 or 11 years ago. And I went to our rabbi and said I wanted to head up a project that would involve congregants of all ages, something that would really be rewarding and fulfilling to people. And I really wasn't sure what the project would be, but I was looking for ideas. And coincidentally, there was an older congregant who had approached the rabbis, I guess within a week of when I did, and he had started an organization called Second Helpings a few years earlier in Hilton Head. And his idea was, when he was living there, he noticed that there was just so much leftover food that was thrown away. So he had started this organization to take the leftover food, and he came up with a structure to in an organization to give it to the needy of Hilton Head, and had organized his own nonprofit. And he wanted to bring such a project to our synagogue. So we knew of each other indirectly, and so they asked if I would like to work on this project with him, and I said, absolutely, it sounded perfect. So his name was Gunther Hecht, and he described how his organization worked in Hilton Head. And, you know, they were well established there, and so we were trying to bring it down to a size that, you know, we could start at our synagogue. So we it started just as a project. So we had to figure out how we could organize ourselves within the confines of our congregation. So we had a sort of working relationship with the Community Assistance Center, which was like a little food pantry that was not close, it was not too far from our congregation. And so once a year we would have like a food drive, and we would, all of our congregants would bring canned goods, and we would donate it to that food pantry. So we thought that was the logical place to start. So I brought along a friend of mine also. So the three of us, you know, we got Second Helping started. We thought we would keep the name Second Helpings because that was the name that they used in Hilton Head, and it seemed like the perfect name. So we went to the Community Assistance Center and met the director and told her what we wanted to get started, and she was so grateful for the help, because the way they were set up, They had a certain number of families that were coming, and the need was greater all the time. And these families could come, and they were allotted a certain amount of food that they could take each week. And they also had other supplies. They could get diapers and school supplies and other things. But we were wanting to provide them with fresh food rather than canned goods. We thought that there was a niche here that wasn't being that we could tap into, which was fresh food that would otherwise be thrown away. And they happened to have enough freezer space that they could accommodate extra food. So then we went to find some donors. And the first place we went to was a school nearby our synagogue, because they serve lunch every day, and we thought for sure they must have some leftovers. So we approached them with our idea, and they were more than happy to provide us with their leftovers. So we, at that point, had enough. We had a donor, and we had a recipient agency. So then we went about structuring how are we going to put this together for our congregation. So we needed drivers, and we needed captains, and we needed volunteers, and the organizational structure. So we put notices out in our newsletter, and we spoke at the High Holy Day services and explained what we were trying to do. It's one of the tenets of Judaism is to repair the world, and so this was in our small way what we could do as a congregation to give back to the community. So we ordered T-shirts and aprons and food pans, and we solicited for volunteers, and we trained people in what they needed to do. We got scales for everybody so that they could weigh the food, and we got some forms made up where everybody could mark down what they were, how many pounds of food, what types of food they were picking up, and so we could keep track of everything we were doing. And we got started, and so we started with this one school, picking up once or twice a week and dropping off at this one agency. And then we went out from there to solicit more agencies, more donors, more drivers, and it just started to grow. And people were really excited about getting involved in it, and we got more and more volunteers. And, you know, it was a struggle, because sometimes we didn't have enough drivers. Sometimes we had more donations and not enough agencies. Sometimes we had more agencies that needed the food and we didn't have enough food to bring to them. Sometimes agencies had certain hours that we could drop off and we didn't have drivers that were able to drop off then. So, you know, it wasn't, and it still isn't always easygoing, but we have grown exponentially since then. And it's just been very rewarding. So from being a co-founder, it was an interesting experience for me, because we started, you know, meeting in my den, and we organized a structure. And, you know, we did a lot of this by phone calls and by meeting at the different agencies and going over all the logistics and talking to the donors. But it wasn't until I myself went out and did the pickups and dropped off the food and saw the hungry people waiting in line to get the food that I really saw. It was just so fulfilling and so rewarding, just the personal contact I had with those in need and the looks of appreciation they had. And, you know, there's just a difference between working behind the scenes on a computer or from your house, which does need to be done, but it's just the great reward I found personally was going out and doing it, you know, and having that interaction with people. And so along the way, as issues popped up, we responded. I know that our first initial agency, it got to the point where we just had so much food and they could not accommodate what we had. You know, one of their freezers broke down and they didn't have enough money to fix it, and we went out and solicited money from some people, and we bought them another freezer. And so all along the way, you know, we were growing and growing, and it became very hard for those of us that started just the number of hours it took to manage this, because as the number of volunteers grew and donors and agencies, it was just a lot to handle. So after the first few years, we were trying to think, how do we want to grow? What's the model going to be for the future? Because the need was just growing, and we knew that this was a model that could easily be copied by other communities, other even places in our city, and it wasn't, you know, it wasn't something that had to be unique to us. It could easily be shared. So that was just a time for us to kind of evaluate where do we want to be and how do we want to grow and what is the best way to grow. So we reached the point that we felt like we were too big for the confines of our synagogue. The need was too great. The demands were too great. And this really wasn't a religious issue at all. It just happened to start at our synagogue, but there was no reason for it to be housed at our synagogue. And it was a community effort, and it should be it should involve the whole community. And so the decision was made to make it a nonprofit. So we started this project in 2004. And in 2013, it became an official nonprofit, Second Helpings Atlanta. And so over the years, we have grown from, you know, the bare-bones staff of just the three of us to now we have an army of 400 drivers. And we have collected in the, 11 years we've been in business, $4.4 million pounds of food. And in September, I was just checking the numbers, we collected 89,000 pounds of fresh food that would ordinarily be just thrown out. So, you know, we're so proud of our success. We've grown exponentially, you know, every year since our existence, 15% to 20%. And it's made such a huge difference to the agencies that we serve that the number of hungry that they're able to serve the needs of has just grown, and they thank us. They appreciate the work we're doing because they're able to do so much more. But, you know, the need still grows. So we were lucky to be able to hire our first director in May of this year, and we also have a volunteer coordinator now. And so we're trying to spread our reach throughout Atlanta. So we're trying to tap into shelters and pantries and assistance centers in all parts of Atlanta and do outreach into other parts of the city so that we can reach that many more people. And we have one refrigerated truck right now, which allows us to collect just huge numbers of amounts of food, but, you know, we want to continue to grow like that. So that's why we were able to make this big step of getting a director, and we just hope to continue to grow.
So if somebody wanted to volunteer, how would they do that?
Well, we have a website called secondhelpingsatlanta.org. It's a really, really nice website. It was just revised and updated. And there is, you can go on there, and there is a form that you can fill out to volunteer. And we have what's called a 90-minute model. And so basically, to volunteer, it's very easy and rewarding, and it only takes 90 minutes once a month. So that's the amount of time it takes you to leave your house, go pick up food from somewhere, drop it off at the agency that is associated with the donor, wherever you pick up the food, and return back to your house.
And so how do they contact, who would they contact?
Well, so if you fill out the form, you'll be contacted by a volunteer coordinator. And there are many, many, many different routes that you can pick and choose from. You can either pick a regular route, something that's convenient to your house or something that maybe is convenient, you know, to where you work. And or you can be a substitute driver. Well, sometimes the need comes up and somebody can't drive their route. And so, for instance, it may tell you that You know, we needed a driver from Whole Foods Sandy Springs to be picked up at a particular time and dropped off at the community assistance center. And so what we do at Second Helpings is the driver goes directly to the donor, whether it's a restaurant or a grocery store or a farmer's market or a school. They pick up the food and they go directly to the agency and drop it off. So it's just a direct route and then you're done. And so some people love it so much and find it so rewarding. They like to do this, you know, 2 or 3 times a week. So it depends on your schedule. You know, some routes you can do as often as you want or as seldom. You know, some people only want to do it once a month. Some people want to do it once a week. It's totally individualized.
There's two things. But importantly, once a month, it doesn't sound like very much, but once a month can be 1,000 pounds of food, right?
Well,
it makes a difference.
It depends on, yes, it depends on who the donor is. Yes, definitely if you're picking up from, you know, Publix or Costco or something big, some routes, you know, there may be a team or there may be a couple people that go together. Or sometimes it may be a truck that picks up. But there's smaller places, too, so it's not to be intimidated. I mean, they would never sign anybody up for something that they could not handle, so they've got it all figured out. So, and a lot of times the donors help loading cars, so it's there's tons and tons of retirees that are drivers, so and it's definitely something that anybody could handle. This is great for retirees. It's great for families. A lot of people love driving and having their young kids go with them. It's also good for teens once they get their driver's licenses because a lot of teens need community service hours for school, and they love to do this. So it really is great for all ages and rewarding for all ages.
But I also want to point out, sometimes people think, well, it's only one day a month. That's not enough for me. If you realize that you're possibly feeding 1,000 pounds worth of food, that's a lot of food to rescue in just one visit. You know,
I just want
people to get the importance of one time. And the second thing I wanted to ask you is if one of the concerns that donors have is what will happen. You know, I don't want to get a lawsuit filed against me. So how are they protected? In other words. Some people want to go and get donors, but they get the door shut in their face. How did you overcome that obstacle?
It was tough. It was really tough at first because that's what they were so worried about. You know, what's going to happen if somebody gets sick from the food we donate, and we don't want to be held responsible, and we got a lot of resistance at the beginning. But there are Good Samaritan laws, and they apply in the state of Georgia, and so their donors are not held accountable for are liable for the food. So, and because of the way we transport the food, you know, it's picked up in a, you know, from the donor in a refrigerated state, and it's taken directly to the agency where it's refrigerated or frozen again. And so, it's protected, and that's why we stress with our drivers. You know, it's not like you pick up the food, run errands, or take it to your house and then take it to the agency. I mean, it's a direct route. And so they're well protected. And it's funny because over the years, you know, certain of the big donors that we have now, they were very resistant. You know, they were very worried about donating food and being held liable. And over time, you know, with these Good Samaritan laws, I think of
Are you moving around?
No, let's see. Is that better?
It was just going away a little bit. So sorry.
Sorry.
Right.
Is this better?
Yeah, it's fine. You just went off.
Oh, I'm sorry. Some of the big donors that were so resistant at first have really, really come around and are our hugest supporters now and give in huge amounts. And I think that they are just so happy to be a part of this program or whatever, you know, food agency that they're dealing with, because the need is just so great. I know one of the agencies that we deal with, they used to be able to have, they had 150 people that would come once a week to be fed, and they credit Second Helpings with being able to feed 1,200 people twice a week. just because
wow.
of the food that we provide them with. So, and believe me, you know, as much work as we do, we are barely tapping into what's available out there. So just the need is so huge.
And where do you cover?
Well,
you have some boundaries?
We are all the way up in Alpharetta, you know, from North Atlanta to, you know, I'd say downtown, a little bit south, but we definitely want to spread our reach. You know, we're not the only food rescue aid organization in Atlanta, and we're a mid-size organization, but we really concentrate on fresh food rather than canned food, so kind of that's our niche. And so we really want to spread our reach as much as we can because, you know, I mean, the need is so great.
Of course.
I think the hunger rate in Georgia is about 20%. 20% of the population.
If someone, do you give to individuals or do you give to certain organizations? Who can come and get food? Who can ask for food from you?
Well, any organization, actually, if there's a shelter or an agency that's interested in receiving food from us, they can contact us also. There's an email, and they can, or email somebody at secondhelpingsatlanta.org, and we would be happy to, we're always looking for agencies that we can help. And if they're within our reach and we can get drivers to where they are, we would be happy to help them out. I mean, that's our goal. You know, they have to have the refrigerated space or freezer space, but we would love that. And if we could get volunteer drivers in different parts of the city and donors from different parts of Atlanta that are interested in participating, it would be awesome. The more the better, the more good we could do.
And I want to add, that person that you contact happens to be me. So if you're on my radio show and you're listening and you want to help out, the email would be agency@secondhelpings.info, and that's secondhelpings all spelled out, S-E-C-O-N-D, helpings, all one word, .info, and I will connect you up.
Mm-hmm.
So let me see, where was my next question a minute ago? Got distracted there for a second. If do they have to have certain storage capabilities to get food?
Well, I would say it would be good to not have a tiny car, depending on where you pick the food up from. But they'll make it work. I think that since it's, you know, we're small enough that we are individualized and you will be talking to whoever volunteers, I know that you would match somebody up with the, you know, perfect donor. And so, you know, they'd have
so
to have
a... So what about the storage? If someone wants to get food, I mean, don't deliver. I mean, we don't give to just individuals.
So we have somebody who will visit an agency that's interested in receiving the food. Like we would go and check out their space and where the drop-off point is and the hours of when they can receive food, the drop-off hours, and make sure that it's convenient. You know, that all has to be, you know, vetted. But, you know, our goal is to be able to serve as many agencies as we can effectively. So, but we have to have the drivers that can reach, you know, those destinations also. So it's a balancing act, but that's why we're really trying to grow, because we have to have drivers in different parts of the city that are willing and able to, you know, reach out to those agencies and provide the service.
And we require certain refrigeration requirements, right? I mean, we have to have, you've got to be able to put this food somewhere. If you can't, you know, 1,000 pounds possibly today, you have to have somewhere to put it.
Well, on the really huge drop-offs like that, that's when we use our truck. The refrigerator truck.
I don't mean you. I mean the agencies.
Oh, the agencies definitely
wants some food. There's some requirements they must meet. Can you tell them what they can expect?
I mean, if it's just a little food pantry that's used to having just canned goods that doesn't have any freezer space, I don't think that they would probably be appropriate for us yet. We're looking for agencies that have, you know, multiple refrigerators and freezers that have people coming every day that are wanting the food, because usually we do have, you know, hundreds of pounds of food at a time that we drop off. Not in all cases. Sometimes it could be 50 or 100 pounds, and that's the thing. We never really know what we're going to get from each donor. If you go to a grocery store or a restaurant, you know, some days it could be 100 pounds, it could be 300 pounds the next day. It's different types of food all the time because, you know, these restaurant or grocery, they don't really know what's going to be left over from one day to the next. So it varies. But definitely they have to have a way to preserve the food. So it's got to be a big enough agency that has a big population coming, and they should be able to refrigerate or freeze the food.
Now, we do have one agency, Church on the Street, who literally has no facility, but it's a group of homeless people in downtown Atlanta, and we are able to help them, but they feed on the spot, don't they, in the street? So, I mean, that's
They do. I think that they do, and I haven't been to Church on the Street, and I know that they are one of our agencies, and I wish I could tell you a definitive answer. I'm not sure
it's
really how that works.
I just want people to go ahead.
No, it could be that we have a particular, you know, donor or donors that, you know, specialize in the kind of food that they need at Church on the Street. I'm not sure.
I just, you know, a lot of people who want to start rescuing food, I just want them to know what their options are. That just because I have actually gone and visited Church on the Street, so I know that just because you have an agency that doesn't have refrigeration doesn't mean that you can't try to help that agency. Because we deliver it to them in not necessarily refrigerated coolers, but at least coolers with ice in it. And the people are waiting on the street for us when we get there and literally eat it, you know, as we take it off the truck. So that is a possibility. I just want people to understand that.
Right.
They're not.
And likewise,
limited.
If you are a caterer or an office that has a big, you know, lunch every day for your employees, or a hotel, or, you know, a ballroom. You know, there's lots of events that have leftover food, and
Some people, you know, for their bar mitzvahs or their wedding,
definitely,
or their Shabbat, whatever it is, you know, that we can come and pick up that food if it's enough. I usually say if you have enough food for 10 people, because, you know, it's worth it to drive and get it.
Exactly. And if you know, you can either call after the event, but it's best if you know you're going to have something, call us ahead of time, and we can arrange to pick up after the event. It's just a lot better than putting it in the trash, because somebody would love to have that food.
So are there any things that you would like to make us aware of specifically that you think for someone trying to start a pantry or for someone that needs food? Or if you know, like a lot of people that I talk to say, well, I don't know what to do. So I say, once they get the food, how do they distribute? Go to Malachi House. Have you been to Malachi House?
I have not been to Malachi House, no.
Oh, it's amazing. We give them a significant amount of food. Myron has, you know, got this set up for a long time, and it gives them a lot of food. And on Wednesdays, they put all the food out. It's in a church, St. Patrick's Episcopal Church here in Dumwich. They put all the food out on a table in a U-shape. They feed them the food from Whole Foods Hot Bar, so they give them a gourmet lunch. Then put all the food on tables in a U-shape and give them a shopping cart, and they get to shop. They get to choose what they want rather than being handed a brown bag. That's how I got on this organization, actually, because I was there, and it was like, oh, my God, I didn't want to do those give me money for cancer or for this or for that or for this. This thing, because I know that goes to pharmaceuticals, this thing goes in their mouth.
Right.
So not only did it rescue the food, but it filled the void in my own life. Just doing this one thing. So it's a wonderful thing. And you can see that video if you go onto YouTube and Google Malachi Storehouse on YouTube. You can see how a significant portion of the food that Second Helpings rescues, how it feeds these people, mm-hmm. and how happy it makes them to get clean, fresh food when they would otherwise
right.
get, you know, a bag of rice and, I don't know.
Or canned, you know, not
yeah,
knocking
exactly.
canned food, but this is fresh, you know, freshly prepared food or grocery store vegetables, fruits, you know, it's good whole food that people really need.
Did you guys file for a nonprofit status for Second
mm-hmm.
Helpings? What did
we
you
do? Have
do? What was the first
status.
Step? What was the first step you did?
Well, there are, you know, a lot of forms you have to fill out, and it's the waiting period. And I wasn't directly involved in that, but I have gone through that process with another organization. And, you know, you have to establish a board of trustees, and there's certain, you know, rules that you have to follow. And but for us, it was important to separate, you know, make ourselves a standalone organization, because now we have the ability to ask for grants and, you know, try to raise money so that we can really grow in a big way. And, you know, we want to have more trucks and, you know, down the road, who knows, we need to hire more staff. And, you know, it's a big job to manage an organization like this, just because of the number of people involved and just the logistics of it all. So we realize how successful it's been, and we want to really maintain that successful model. So, you know, it was important for us to become a nonprofit.
So what's your next your goal or vision that you want to try to do? What's the next thing?
Well, I think, I mean, raising money is really number one, because I think if we can, the more grants that we can get and the more fundraising we can do, the more outreach we can do, and the more, you know, if we can get that many more trucks and that many more staff to handle that many more agencies and drivers and volunteers, you know, the bigger we can grow and the more impact we can make. So I think that's the bottom line, is, you know, we need to just continue to amplify our success. And the way to do that, you know, when you're just starting out as a nonprofit and you have a successful model and you want to grow, it just takes money, because, you know, our director's doing a fantastic job and leading us to future success, and we just need the funds to keep that going. So that's just, I think, our top priority at this point.
So, not to get onto a negative, but I know it had to be hard, you know, raising kids and running a house when you first started out. What advice can you give to volunteers who go, help, you know, do I do this for my, for the world, or do I do this for my kids? I mean, how did you walk that fine line? Because that's a hard thing to do when you're first starting out something that's grown to this degree.
Yeah.
How do you do it?
I think it's just a personal decision. It's personal to each person. For me, I've just always had this need to give back, and I thought a lot about where that came from, and I'm not really sure. I think maybe because I am the granddaughter and daughter of Holocaust survivors, and they came so close to losing it all, and I think that has, you know, really grounded me and given me a purpose in life to give back and appreciate every moment. And so for me and my life, I have always really wanted to set a great example for my kids of giving back and doing what I can to better the world. So I always have wanted to make time to do that. It's almost like a calling for me. It wasn't even anything I really had to think about. It's just something I just feel compelled to do. So it was more a question of in what way was I going to do it? And, you know, at a certain point, I you know, been one of those, you know, as my kids were growing up, one of those moms who did so much volunteering in different capacities. And at a certain point in my life, I finally thought, you know, rather than saying yes to all these different things, I really want to start saying yes to something that really is personally meaningful to me or personally fulfilling. So that's when I started thinking, okay, what am I really going to devote my time to? And so when the idea of this project came up, it spoke to me because this is something that, you know, it just fills a void. It's something that just people need. It's just an elemental thing that people need, and it's people helping people. And that's what, you know, compelled me to be involved in that. And so, you know, everybody has something in them, I think, that would, you know, would call them to act. And for me, it was this. So, you know, I can't speak for other people, but I think if anybody's interested in trying to find out what they can do to give back, if they're interested in doing that, I think you just have to have a good heart-to-heart talk with yourself and think about what you're really, really passionate about. Think about what makes you get up in the morning and what drives you, what excites you. You know, if you were really to think about what's going on in the world, what would you really most like to talk about, or what just moves you the most? And so for me, it was this, and it's a few other things, and everybody has, you know, their own few things.
So are you're doing something new as well. I want you to tell us about that, but also want to know, well, it just blew out the window. I get so focused on what you're saying. Oh, I know what it was. Do you have a plan to take this to other locations to grow like that?
For second helpings?
Yeah.
You know,
I mean,
if it were up to
around
me,
the world, or is it, do you have that vision?
For second helpings?
Yes.
Personally, I would. I mean, you know, I'm not, as just a person, I'm on the board. You know, I'm not directing it. I think that the model is a great model that could be replicated very easily everywhere. So to me, anybody that thinks that this is a model that they could incorporate in their community, you know, I think go for it. I mean, it's, why not? You know, it's just going to only help. And so,
would you be willing to mint? If someone called us in, I don't know, Chicago, I'd like to do something like you're doing in my community.
Mm-hmm.
Would Second Helpings be inclined to share information with them to help them do their thing, to get started? You know, how do you know what? A volunteer,
well,
waiver, you know, you got to have that. Or a donor, the instructions for the donor. Would you be willing to do that, or is that something that can't happen?
Well, you know, I can't speak on behalf of the organization, but I can speak on behalf of myself. I would be happy to help anybody that has any questions. You know, I have a gut feeling that the organization would be happy to also. I know they have their hands full right now just with, you know, very, very busy growing and just keeping up with what's going on. But, you know, the model, as I've explained, and I think it's pretty well documented on our website, you know, is easily replicable. And, you know, I would be happy to answer any questions that anybody has if they'd like to reach out to me.
And what positions have you found that you have to have to start a grassroots like this? What would your leadership positions be? For somebody that's trying to do it, what do they need to know they need to do? What kind of roles to fill?
Well, you would have to have, you know, just to start with, you'd have to have, I'd say probably three people. You'd have to have somebody that would find donors, you know, restaurants and grocery stores, markets, go out there and find people that would be willing to donate the food. Then you have to find somebody to get the agencies that would want the food and be able to accommodate the food. And then you would have to find somebody to solicit the drivers. And then, of course, there's the logistics of ordering, you know, the pans and the lids that you take to some of these, if it's a school or whatever, so that they can put the food in and have it waiting for you when you go to pick it up. And, you know, as you grow, obviously it takes more and more and more volunteers. It takes an army is the way that's what we say. But just to get started, I mean, it takes a small team, but it's definitely doable.
We record poundage and do some of the organizations that are the statistics that we keep about the food enable other organizations to get better grants? Would somebody need to do something like that?
They do want to know the amount of food that we collect, and actually for tax purposes, I don't know exactly how it works because I'm not involved in that end of it, but you get a certain amount of credit for the monetary credit for the amount of per pound of food that you collect. I'm not sure how that works because it's not real money. But we do keep track of the amount of pounds of food we pick up from each donor, and that's how we keep track of, you know, our success, and the donors know how many pounds of food they've donated, and the agencies keep track of how much they have received. They keep very close records of the good that they do and how many people they're able to support.
And also, if you have an agency that says, well, I don't know how I can have, you know, manpower there when you get there, because they may not have enough volunteers. And this is one of the things that I'd like people to know is many of our agencies put lock boxes on the outside of their doors,
mm-hmm.
and we come and we have a relationship established so that they know who we are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a trust established, and so they have a lock box with a code, and we come and unlock it and go in and unload the food and lock the door back. And nobody's ever there, and it works.
You know, exactly.
Sometimes if we need it, if we need help, some people will make, if we'll tell them when we're coming, they'll have a volunteer there to unload if it's somebody
right.
that can unload. So there's
it's a real partnership.
To every problem. Right.
It's a partnership, and so, you know, the person that is in charge of all the agencies, I mean, they do go out first, and they work out all the details, and, you know, there's a lot of times where you can only drop off at between certain hours, and sometimes it's dark outside, or, you know, it's that's just the only time when you can come, or that's the only time where parking space is available, and, you know, we just have to work around those details and find a way to make it work.
And two, like, Thanksgiving is coming up, so people go, oh,
mm-hmm.
my God, what do I do? The agency's closed. The donors closed, the driver's out of town, you know, one of those things is
mm-hmm.
always happening. So there's a solution to that, too. We try to plan ahead, you know, finding out who's closed, whether it's the donor
right.
or the agency. And we simply, if it's the agency that's closed, we simply reroute the food somewhere else. Our volunteers are fabulous. They'll take somewhere else. Or if it's the store that's closed, we just simply call the agency and say, hey, none today, and they say fine. So it's
right.
easy.
Exactly. They're so grateful for what we're able to do that everybody just works together, and it's just a beautiful model.
It's wonderful. And sometimes I know, like, we have a new store opening in a new county. Well, I won't say a new county, but a county that's a little bit far. So they
mm-hmm.
call and want to give us their food, and we don't have volunteers yet.
Right.
So, you know, don't despair. Don't let the food go to waste. Sometimes if you have an agency that you've established a relationship with, if you call them and say, hey, we're going to get this food. We can get this food, but we don't have a volunteer yet. Will you go get it? And sometimes, you know, they can manage to do that until you can get volunteers. So
right.
there's always a solution when you work in
mm-hmm.
a team.
It could take a week or two to get things worked out, but we will find a way.
One of our agencies goes and picks up, Church on the Street, as a matter of fact, goes and picks up food at one of our locations, and the things that they can't use, this agency will drop it off at another agency on the way back, so they share. Aww. So that nothing goes in the trash can. Isn't that wonderful?
Great. It's great.
Yeah, great.
Love it.
They work together to help one another.
Mm-hmm. It's
and
great.
If you have, I know Starbucks is donating thousands of pounds of coffee in a few weeks. So nothing will we turn away if you have something mm-hmm. to give us. We can find
and
a mouth for it to go in.
And if anybody out there is in need of bread, any sort of bread, that is something we always seem to have a surplus of. And we have more than enough bread. So if anybody out there needs bread for anything, we would love to know.
Absolutely.
We would love to give it to you.
We have, fortunately, I mean, it's such a blessing. We have spoiled the people that we donate to. Sometimes they're like, we have enough bread. Can you find somebody else to give this bread to? It's a wonderful thing to be able to turn bread away.
I know. Sometimes I've even taken bread to places where workers are standing on corners, you know, looking for day jobs, and I just hand out bread because, you know, everybody just needs food.
That's right. So you have about 5 minutes. Do you want to talk about your new thing that you're doing?
Well, it's not quite ready yet.
What do you want to talk about?
Well, I'll just talk about in life. You know, I've reached the point where I'm an empty nester now, and I feel like I know Second Helpings is in awesome hands, and I love, you know, staying involved in that. And I reached the point where I wanted to start another venture. So I did a lot of thinking, and I thought, you know, I don't want to turn 80 years old and look back and think, now what did I do with all my time since my kids have been out of the house? And so I came up with an adventure that is going to be a charitable online charitable giving website, and I wish I could reveal all the details now, and I would love to follow up with you when it's launched. But it's a way of people connecting with each other socially around charitable giving. And so for the last year and a half, that's really what I've been concentrating all my efforts on. And it's my way of giving back. It's another way for me to give back. So,
well, let me know when you're ready to talk about it. In the meantime, I want to tell one thing where we're stepping outside the boundaries that we have just a little bit to try something new. Thanksgiving's coming up, and we always want to help at Thanksgiving. So this year, Second Helpings decided that we would gather food and put in bags for our homeless people at Church on the Street. But we wanted to expose children, because food stability is in your next-door neighbor's house. It's in the child that sits next to them in class, and they don't realize it. So we reached out to the local high school, actually where my son is, in the ROTC unit. And ROTC requires certain amounts of community service. So the we're going to get food. Second Helpings is given a sum of money, and ROTC is going to come, and we're going to purchase the food and put in pop-top cans of meat or bags of food that the homeless people can have over Thanksgiving. The ROTC is going to do that for the homeless people. So it's kids doing it this time, and that's a new thing for us, and we're really excited about it.
That's awesome.
Know that you can always grow a little bit. We hope that it works this year, but there's always room for growth once you get your basic foundation started.
Absolutely. And it's so great to get kids involved, you know, at a young age, giving back, because I think that the rewards of it will foster, you know, a love of giving back that will last a lifetime, really.
I think it will make them more considerate of their peers, you know, that, hey, man, you know, from this time you're in the second grade, every time a holiday comes, first grade, every time a holiday comes up, that's all you do is you draw the turkeys, or you draw your Passover or your Christmas and the dinners on the table, and you can't wait to get out for that school break, for that holiday, and everybody's talking about their turkeys or whatever it is that they have, and you go home and there's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's important to show these kids that that really does exist in front of their nose, so it teaches them that, compassion and empathy, but I think it also will teach them leadership, you know, how to take charge and go out and accomplish something themselves. So that's an area that I hope that we can do in the future, and we're certainly doing now, and room for other people to do it as well.
I'm glad Second Helping is a part of that.
Do you want to tell us the organization's website and some way to contact Second Helpings if they want to contribute or if they want to volunteer?
Sure.
If they want ideas.
www.secondhelpingsatlanta, all spelled out, .org. And there are different tabs on there if you want to be a donor, if you want to volunteer, if you want to give money, and just for information. And if you would like to reach out to me personally for, you know, information or advice, my name's Allie Allen, A-L-L-I-A-L-L-E-N. And my email is A-S, like Sam, R, Allen, at gmail.com. And I'd be happy to help you with any questions you have.
My email, if you're an agency and you need food, is agency@secondhelpings.info, and we would be grateful for anything, time or money, even questions, just to help contribute to humanity. So, Allie, thank you for taking time out of your schedule to come on my show tonight.
Well, my pleasure. Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
It's an important thing, and many people have many questions, so you've done another mitzvah in helping people understand how to perhaps at least start on a path to do what you've already done here in Atlanta. So thank you, all of you, Myron,
you so much.
And Gunter and Beth, all of you, thank you. Well, have a good evening.
Thank you.
And I'll see you soon. Good night.